Now it's time for very serious football talk with the man who met his wife on a blind date, chaperoned by his parents.
They actually came along on the first date with us. That was a...
No!
I rode in the back seat. I was 22.
The man who needs to take a minute to remember the names of all of his children.
Do all of your kids have the same first letter?
No, actually. Let me think. Do any of them? Tucker, Mason, Cole, Isabel, and Lucas.
The man who can defend you in court, but will probably choose not to.
I'll copter this on a public setting right now. I am an aggressive cuddler in a consensual sense.
Comma, officer.
Good grief, he's a pastor too? When does this guy sleep?
You will find Seth Geiser everywhere except for in his or your bed, because not only does he not sleep, he's also a faithful husband. So that's important.
It's Seth Geiser of The Athletic on Almost Entirely Sports.
It's the return of Seth Geiser on a Tuesday. Didn't get to talk to you last week, Seth. The good news is the main stuff wasn't fully happening until this last week. There's a ton of major news from the Chiefs offensive line that we thought was going to take like months to get a better picture of. So I'm very excited to talk to you about all those things. You wrote about some of it immediately after it happened with Mitchell Schwartz. Now, obviously, yeah, some news on the Eric Fisher front. And of course, you can check out all of Seth's work, both in the Chief in the North newsletter at mnchiefsfan.substack.com and in The Athletic and in the Times Ours podcast, which I don't know if it's out yet, but we recorded it today, so it probably is. I haven't listened to it because I've been here. I don't actually listen back to our episodes. Do you listen back to our episodes, Seth? There's a new Times Ours out now.
I have listened back to a few. There are a couple. There was one where I don't remember what happened, but it was one of the funniest things that it was one of the episodes where I really like lost my breath. I was laughing so hard when we did the episode. So I went back and listened to it because I really enjoyed it. I genuinely don't remember what it was. And then the other one I went back and listened to is the one where you and I started bickering during the middle of the episode.
Yes.
And because I was curious how bad it sounded. And that's when I discovered the magic of editing and how Danielle took what was, and I don't want to exaggerate, it was probably like a 5-second pause.
Yeah.
But when you turn a 5 or 6 second pause into a 1 or 2 second pause, it makes a tremendous difference, because there really was that pause where like it had become clear that I was actually angry.
Yes.
And like it just got super awkward for everyone. And because she shortened that pause, it actually still sounded like playful banter. So those are the only two times that I can remember that I've listened back.
Danielle will absolutely step in front of a train and maybe not take the train, because that's not going to help, but then use her Superman powers to just, like, push it over. I don't know. Who has telekinesis? She has telekinetic powers that just change the audio before it gets into anyone else's ears.
Incredible amount of power.
The other thing that I didn't know until before we did this segment that you hid during the course of Times Ours is that today is your birthday. So happy birthday, Seth. Here's a song for you. Happy. I'm not going to sing the happy birthday song. There's absolutely no
thank
chance.
You.
No, neither one of us want that.
No one who's listening or will listen.
Yeah.
Or won't even listen, but will just hear about it, wants that. But thank you very much. It's the big 3-6. I have doubled up on being 18 years old. More time has passed since I turned 18 than before 18. And that's a weird way of looking at it.
Your willingness to say your age just now did unfortunately both save you from and derail what was going to be a really sweet joke. I was so ready to say, listen, and Seth, I just feel like as good a time as any to, you know, thank you again for all the time over these last several years you've spent being a part of this show, and how much I've enjoyed doing Times Ours, how much I value both your work as an analyst and your time as a friend. And I know the big 5-0 that's a big marker in the middle of your life. And you took it from me, though. You took it from me because you just said 36. Damn it.
Yep, this isn't my first rodeo with you. And let's be honest, when you really, you know, anyone who's listening to this right now who is younger than maybe 25, and even a few years older than that, honestly, here's 36 and is like, dang, that's old. Let me just tell you that you do not feel 36 when you're 36.
Yeah, I can see that.
I, I feel heavier. Let's make no mistake there. I feel like there's more of me. But that's just more of the acknowledgement of reality. But, like, in terms of – I always – so about 5 years ago, I asked my dad when I had turned 30 or 31. I asked my dad, who's obviously, like, 25 years older than me, mm-hmm. said, man, you know, I keep waiting to feel like an adult.
Yeah.
Like, I – you know, like – because, you know, like, when you're in – you know, it's sort of the Family Guy joke. I need an adult. I need an adult. It's like you – when are you going to be that person where something goes down at the grocery store or something weird happens and people look at you and it's like, there's an adult. They'll know what to do. And my assumption was always they really did know what to do.
Uh-huh.
And so I was like, when am I going to feel like I know what I'm doing?
Yeah.
So I asked my dad that. And at the time, he goes, well, I'm 60, so maybe at 61 or at some point after that. So it's just fascinating because I walk around feeling like I'm in my early 20s, and then I pass a reflective surface or, you know, walk by a group of people who are in their 20s.
Yeah.
And their complete lack of interest in talking to me.
Yeah.
And I go, all right, I'm old. So it's an interesting thing. I'll also say this, though, to all you young people, the 30s rule.
Okay, that's good to know.
Oh, they're so much fun. It's so great. You like – and, like, if you're in your mid-30s, like, Jazz and I were able to purchase clothes for our kids this year. Like, you occasionally don't have to save up to be poor anymore.
Wow.
And so that's kind of cool in your 30s.
That seems good.
I mean, not all the time, because every now and then we still end up broke. So I'm not sure how that happened. But anyway.
You should get another job of some sort.
Yeah, I think I should. I think I've got – that's my problem is I'm not filling my time enough.
Yeah.
But no, 30s rule – they easily the best decade so far. So here's hoping, you know, the next 36 are as good.
And then honestly, you know, by 40s or 50s, or I guess in my, wow, I'm thinking about how old my parents are old, man. You ever think about how old our parents are? Eventually you get that decade where you just move to Florida and don't have to worry about the cold hurting the inside of your lungs anymore. And I imagine that's probably also a pretty good decade. So, you know, life is good, except for the parts that aren't.
Oh, absolutely. That seems like the ideal. My wife is trying to currently speed that up,
mm-hmm.
Like the Florida part.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep telling her, you know, that's it's hard. You got about 25 years of steps that I think we're skipping here.
Right.
she was not persuaded by my logic. So I'm pretty sure my wife might be moving in with your parents at some point.
That's probably it'll be a little bit of a tight squeeze, but I'm sure she'll have a great time. Maybe she and my sister can share a room, at least for a little while, and Chloe's a good share, so that'll work out just fine. While we're talking about just old, ancient, old people, do you want to talk about the return of 31-year-old Mitchell Schwartz, that ancient man?
Yes, that's huge. So I that was big enough news to where I stopped what I was doing just to write about him. Plus, any chance I get to make video clips of Mitch Morse. See, man, it's every time.
Man,
I miss Mitch Morse.
Sorry, honey, who? That's what. Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. No, I know.
Oh,
but anytime I can make video clips of Mitch Schwartz pass blocking, I do it because he's so great at it, and it's so much fun to watch and break down how he does it, because he doesn't. There are some guys like when you watch like Tyron Smith at his peak,
mm-hmm.
or if you watch like Trent Williams last year, they are noticeably much stronger than the guys they're blocking,
mm-hmm.
right? Think like what you would see from Willie Rolfe.
Yeah.
For Chiefs fans, he would put his hands on people and it was like he stunned them. They couldn't go anywhere. It didn't matter. One arm, two arm, it just didn't matter. Where Schwartz doesn't have that advantage. I mean, he's strong, certainly. He's an NFL offensive lineman. But he doesn't just dominate like that. He's just so skilled technically. And so I love making video clips of that to just show him, like, where he does a little feint of a punch
mm-hmm.
to get defenders to lunge and then just rides them around the pocket because they're stumbling. It's hilarious every time.
I'm watching the clip you're referring to there right now. Again, people can check. This is a piece that came out right away in the Chief North newsletter. I'm guessing because it's the Texans and the giant arm sleeve. It's Arizona Cardinals legend J.J. Watt here, and
yes.
You're right. It's a little kind of fake punch, and And Schwartz just kind of, I think you used this phrase already, but he just kind of rides it out. Like, it's just, it's deadly efficient and not that, it doesn't really pop off this off the screen.
It doesn't look dominant. It looks like, oh man, he just barely hit that block. And you and I have talked about this before. Mitch Schwartz has made a living out of looking like he's barely doing it right.
Yeah.
But it just is snap after snap. And it looks exactly the same whether he's facing Johnny No Name or Von Miller.
Yeah.
And normally that would be an insult to a player, like, where it looks just as bad when you're facing Johnny No Name. But instead, with him, he looks just as good facing Von Miller as he does versus Johnny No Name. And it's hilarious. And so the big thing for me, and again, yeah, it's on the Chief of the North newsletter. Check it out. That one might be unlocked. Because why would I ask people to pay for my content when I can just give it to them?
I think this one might be unlocked. Yeah, it's really, really frustrating.
Sweet.
Yeah.
So the big thing I wanted to emphasize was the difference in the 2019 Super Bowl versus the 2020 Super Bowl. Now, obviously, there's more going on, mm-hmm. right? You know, Fisher was hurt, and the offensive line was just incredibly depleted across the board. But what I wanted to emphasize was a couple of different snaps where, had the right tackle spot held up, and this is the 2020 Super Bowl now, you would see a difference. Mm. And so I tried to show a couple snaps from the 2019 Super Bowl, and what I'm trying to show people is, now imagine, and this is where it gets tough for people, but now imagine the right tackle block didn't hold up here.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's an effect that has on the quarterback where he now has to start to drift left. And in the cases of the snaps that I showed, because they were ones where Nick Bosa just inhaled Eric Fisher, there would have been a sack, or it would have been a hit, or would have, you know, he would have had to sprint around like he did constantly against Tampa Bay. Mm-hmm. And that's what can happen. And that's how important Mitch Schwartz is. By dominating his right side, he gave the Chiefs at least an opportunity in the Super Bowl in 2019 to where it didn't look like what we saw in 2020, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Plus, you know, the receivers, like, caught the ball.
Caught the passes, right.
Yeah, that matters too.
Yeah.
So he's just so much fun to write about. I did not expect this. I really thought that we'd be hearing a retirement announcement from him.
Yeah. So this is probably going to tie itself to Eric Fisher, and I'd rather you try to pretend that we didn't get any Eric Fisher, which honestly, maybe it's best to treat it that way anyway, any Eric Fisher updates. But specific to Schwartz, maybe this doesn't mean you got to make your choice on how they're going to use their picks and their free agent money this offseason. But how confident are you feeling at this point based on Schwartz getting surgery, his terms about, you know, looking forward to an injury-free 2021, Brett Veach saying that it looks like Schwartz should be good to go by the beginning of training camp. How confident are you that we're going to actually see Mitch Schwartz in a way that looks like Mitchell Schwartz?
I'm fairly confident in it. You know, back surgery is never a good thing. Mm-hmm. It's got to be kind of a unique issue if they really thought that he might be able to play through it,
mm-hmm.
and he just wanted to give it a shot because he clearly knew surgery would shut him down for the remainder of the season,
yeah.
You know, a couple months at least. He seems confident. He's a guy who, I mean, he hit every snap for like a decade, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a guy who knows how to play through little things. And so I'm confident. I don't think he would be trying to come back if he didn't think he could and if he didn't think he'd be at his best. It's not like, I mean, this guy's he's a perfectionist. He's not going to be happy coming back and playing poorly. So I'm pretty confident about that. Partly because of the timing of the surgery and that he didn't seem too rushed about it. He directly said he thought it would be a pretty quick turnaround. I'm pretty confident in Mitch Schwartz. And I know we're not supposed to bring up Eric Fisher, but I'm going to use it for a frame of reference.
Yeah.
I'm much more confident in Mitch Schwartz being back for training camp than I am Eric Fisher.
So let's talk about Fisher then. So we get the update from Veach yesterday. That was yesterday, huh? Yesterday morning, Veach's press conference, he talks about the timelines for Patrick Mahomes, who I don't think we're worried about in any particular way at this point, with his turf toe surgery and everything. Mitchell Schwartz, and then also says that Eric Fisher is going to be on track for training camp, mid-August return. Veach was referring to his notes from Rick Burkholder. We've played that audio here and everything. At this point, I imagine most people kind of have a general frame of reference for all of that. But I guess, what did you think whenever you heard that? And then what's playing into your pessimism, perhaps, at this point, if that's fair to say?
I guess I just don't know a lot of situations where a guy came back from a torn Achilles in 6 or 7 months.
Yeah.
Now, I know what's happened. I know on Times R's, Nate pointed out that Terrell Suggs came back from a torn Achilles in like 6 or 7 months. But it just seems awfully optimistic, considering, again, you know, you got to think, he was injured in the second to last game of the year.
Yeah.
With an injury that's known to be a pretty brutal one.
Yeah.
And so it's just hard to believe. Like, with the back thing, I guess it's because I don't know specifics, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I knew it was the type of injury that normally takes people, you know, 8 to 12 months to come back from, I would not feel super confident in Schwartz being back in time and ready to play, you know, because he got the surgery in February, right? Like, and so whereas with him, there's more unknowns there, but he seems confident, so that gives me confidence. And Rick Burkholder is great at his job.
Mm-hmm.
So far be it for me to question him, because I would never, because he's a much smarter human than I am, among many other reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just hard when you know what the standard timeline is for such things. And again, maybe Rick has seen something in his recovery where he's like, wow, you know, Fish, you're like 3 months ahead. And if so, hey, great.
Mm-hmm.
That would be incredible news for the Chiefs. But it's just a little harder to believe because we're more familiar with torn Achilles.
Yeah. So take it this way, then. Again, this is something that we talked about with Nate in today's Times Ours, and we'll probably be able to have gotten into a little more detail with there. But honestly, I guess we started the show with just me and Nate, so some of this I haven't heard from you on yet. But one thing I do know is that you're not super excited about the idea of the Chiefs going into this season. Let's say with, you know, three guys currently on the roster, if the three tackles are Mitch Schwartz, Eric Fisher, and Lucas Niang, you're going to be uneasy, I think it's fair to say?
I'm going to be very uneasy. I think in that situation, you at the very least try to bring Mike Remmers back to have a swing tackle as a backup. Lucas Niang, I think they drafted him in the third round.
Yep.
And, you know, he's had a year now to prepare. Now, the problem is it wasn't a typical year.
Yep.
Obviously, by him opting out, this is going to be technically his rookie year this next year. So maybe they sit him. I don't know. His college tape was very good overall. Tons of physical talent. He actually is more of a he's a little stronger. He's a little more noticeable with his amount of strength when he gets his hands on guys, at least at the college level. We'll see if that translates. And so it's, I always assume the plan when they drafted him was for him to start his second year, but now I don't know because they just haven't had a chance to work with him. So I'm not sure what they'll do with him. It just does make me uncomfortable though, the idea of relying on Fisher and Schwartz now knowing that if that's the plan and they go down, it's devastating, and the chances of them going down are higher or not being ready to go, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're significantly higher than they were this time last year. We always knew, you and I talked about it all the time, you know, hey, who'd be the worst Chief for them to lose besides Mahomes? Mm-hmm. You and I would often at least talk about Mitch Schwartz.
Yeah, we would usually go Kelsey Hill, and then the conversation usually Schwartz, yeah.
Yeah, and that I think that bore out the fact Mike Remmers deserves a lot of credit for the fact that it didn't hurt them as much as it could have.
Mm-hmm.
He played pretty well at right tackle all year, and it helped.
Mm-hmm.
But if that's your plan, and you know there's an increased chance of injury, it would be similar to how I would feel, only a little less so, if the Chiefs, like let's say Sammy Watkins went out and tested free agency, didn't get any offers that he really liked, and said, well, hey, I'll come back for a bargain bin price.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Even if they did that and they got him at dirt cheap, you know, $3 million or something like that, I would still be nervous if that was their plan at X receiver because he hasn't been able to stay healthy.
Yeah.
And so it almost makes you nervous hearing that they're going to be back because it's like, well, wait, are they going to rely on that? Because it makes me wonder, well, I kind of assumed that they would maybe go after a tackle in free agency or draft one. Now it's like, oh, but what if they rely on that? So it's actually, with Fisher, it's raised my anxiety a bit in terms of if they rely on him, they better be really sure. And I don't know how you can be really sure with that kind of thing in, you know, 3 weeks and then 1 month, right? Because free agency and the draft are coming up now.
I think the comparison to the receiver position is a very apt one because you've got a couple things you feel okay about, really good about in the case of Tyreek Hill and a healthy Mitch Schwartz. Guess that's TBD a little bit. But in terms of like, oh, really? Like, you don't want to try to, you know, add some reinforcements there or maybe even raise the ceiling a little bit, I think makes a lot of sense. The thing that in a kind of shifting to the draft logic now, because I'll let you spend some free agency money if you're feeling like it here in a second. But it seems like a lot of, I don't know if this is analysts or mostly fans. I don't really know if it matters. But something that seems like that's come up a lot is this idea of, well, the Chiefs still need to draft a tackle in the first round. They gotta add a tackle, and they can't be doing any of this third round, fourth round bleep anymore. They gotta go get a tackle. I don't think that the logic there is terribly wrong, but I do think that it's a little silly to assume that whichever tackles are available at 31 overall are going to be some sort of sure thing at left tackle in week one of their rookie season. It just, that to me,
right.
or even just better than Lucas Niang. If you said, hey, you can either get Lucas Niang right at, with everything that's happened with his career so far, or just whoever's at 31 at left tackle, I think I would probably take Niang with the expectation that he got some, like, that he got the playbook and some phone numbers before he opted out. Like, that alone would kind of tempt me in that regard. And obviously, he's been healthy. So, yeah, what do you think about the idea of what they should do then if you do want them to keep adding to the tackle spots?
I think that's a really good point you make with regards to Niang. And the big thing with him was that he wasn't quite your typical third-round pick.
Right.
It was made very clear, like a lot of draft sites, and obviously this isn't the end-all, be-all, but they had good reasons for it. A lot of draft sites really liked that pick.
Yeah.
Because they said, you know, this is a dude that had, because he was considered, after not the 2019 season, but after the 2018 season, he went into that next season considered maybe the potential best tackle in the class. Mm. And then he got hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Then he played hurt for a while. And you and I talked about this when they drafted him. He might have been better off just sitting out.
Yeah.
Because, you know, his tape wasn't as good, but he was backpedaling instead of sliding. And he clearly was not feeling all right. And it made teams a little bit skittish. Whereas had he had just gotten the surgery earlier, he might have been fully healthy by the time the combine came around. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That was one of those situations where he honestly tried to do too much and do it in the wrong way. And so I think he was considered a first-round talent, and he slid to the third, so people love that. So I think especially with that, you're not going to grab – if there was a guy who you were like, oh, this guy is a guy you can plug and play at left tackle and get above-average play right out of the gate, those guys go in the top 20 at least.
Yeah.
At the very least. And if you've got guys who are like, oh, I think this guy's going to be a really great left tackle, those guys go in the top 10. Like, Sewell, I mean, that dude's not dropping to, you know, the mid-20s where the Chiefs can pick up – can trade up to get him.
Yeah.
Right? If the two top guys – drop to the teens, teams are going to trade up for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so then by the time you get to the end of the first round with tackles, you're dealing with guys that are a lot like Niang. You know, they've got some red flag, or they're considered a little lower ceiling, or they're a little more boom or bust, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know how much better off you are there. And so honestly, if it comes down to that, if they think they like Niang and they like Mitch Schwartz's chances of being healthy, I would almost prefer they go the interior offensive line where the more high-level prospects can potentially drop to 31.
This is a little bit of just kind of a random – without any real expectation of what the result would be, I just clicked the 2018 NFL draft because it's long enough ago to have a little bit of a sample size. The first lineman off the board was Mike McGlinchey, who was drafted by the 49ers. He was the 9th overall pick, and I know Mike McGlinchey's name mostly from seeing 49ers fans be furious at him last year on like a weekly basis. Like I just went to a Niners website doing like a little off-season housekeeping thing, and they're saying he's not going anywhere, but we have no idea if they're going to pick up their fifth year option or not. If you're not picking up the fifth-year option of the number 9 overall pick, that stinks. And that was one of the that was a tackle in the top 10. Like, just picking from a random year that we have some sample sizes for. Like, even if you go up Colton Miller at 15, people were laughing at, and it might have ended up being an okay pick, I guess. It's just even the sure things aren't sure things by any means.
Especially at the offensive line. And that used to be one of the more sure things in the draft, right? You could project a little bit better there than most other positions. The thing is, playing offensive line in college right now is very different than playing offensive line in the NFL. And not just in terms of, like, you know, you're going up against, you know, boys instead of men and all this stuff. That's always been the case. But now you're talking in terms of actual technique that's being taught and schemes that are being run. It's an entirely different thing, and that's tough for people to overcome, and it also makes them very tough to project. So I completely agree, and that's kind of the problem, especially the lower in the draft you get, the less of a sure thing, quote-unquote, guys become. And we can all think of players who were sure things. I mean, crud, the year Eric Fisher got drafted number 1 overall, it was a huge competition between him and Luke Jokel, who was considered the sure thing, right? And I don't think he's in the league anymore.
No, I don't think he's been in the league for a few years.
Right. And so it's just there's no sure thing, including an offensive line. And that's why I get really hesitant. Like you said, the idea is great. Yeah, draft a tackle to shore up your offensive line. But that's one of the problems I have with drafting position instead of player is that in certain areas of the draft – you are very specifically handicapping yourself by going after a certain position at 31. And tackle happens to be one of those because those guys still mean a great deal and are going to get drafted higher. And that's where I would go more the interior. And this is just anecdotal evidence, mind you. Mm-hmm. When I think anecdotally of interior guys who were thought of very highly as like first rounders, generally speaking, it feels like they hit more often. Mm-hmm. And again, I have done – the amount of research I've done on that statement, Josh, it's not tremendous. But anecdotally – and I'm not just talking about, like, generational guys like Quentin Nelson. Everyone knew that guy was going to be unbelievable. Mm-hmm. But even other guys that you just that the expectations are that they're good offensive linemen, that seems to pan out more often on the interior. And I think that's partly because those guys go in, like, the 20s or the late first round or the second round. And so that's maybe a direction I would go because, again, offensive line is a sum of its parts, and they can help Patrick Mahomes and help the rest of the offensive line by having improved play at guard. That's one reason why Kelechi Osemele helped Osemele. I do that every time, don't I?
You did it. Kelechi Osemele. You do it confidently enough, it's hard to catch you on it. So.
Yeah, but no, I just remembered because it sounds like I'm saying he's smelly, and it's ridiculous. but and again, I've been corrected on this so many times, but he helped the offensive line by playing at a level at left guard higher than the Chiefs had seen in recent years, and it had a ripple effect.
Yeah.
And so that's something worth noting in terms of maybe utilizing the interior pick. You get maybe a better chance of getting a sure thing because you're absolutely right about the flaw in that logic with the tackle at 31.
So Luke Jokel played 4 years with the Jags and then 1 year with Seattle in 2017, and that's the end of his Pro Football Reference page, which is wild. Rookie contract,
he was a sure thing.
Yeah.
He was the high floor guy.
Yes, he was. That's exactly right. Fisher was the high upside guy.
Yep, and hey, I mean, it's not like Fisher's been incredible, but when you look back at that 2013 draft, honestly, getting Eric Fisher there, that's not that bad in terms of, like, realistic picks. You know, you can always go back and, like, well, this guy was drafted in the fourth round and he's a star. It's like, okay, let's be realistic in terms of how they were projected. You know, everyone says now, like, you know, every team now says, you know, we really liked Mahomes coming out.
Mm-hmm.
We just, And so it is an interesting thing, and it does freak me out to, you know, close the loop. It does freak me out a little, the idea that they might depend on Fisher and Schwartz being healthy. But again, I trust Rick Burkholder a ton. I mean, he is a great, great athletic trainer. He does a great job with them. But I would want them to still maybe go offensive line, because then if something doesn't work out, maybe you still have strength throughout the offensive line that you can lean on a little bit more.
That 2013, we do this show here on Almost Entirely Sports, this illustrious radio program. Once a month or so, I think we end up going back down the rabbit hole of, hey, remember how bad the 2013 draft ended up going? But, like, if you want to tell me how many of these picks were definitely better than Eric Fisher, you can tell me when to stop. We might be going for a while, though. Eric Fisher, Luke Jokel, Deion Jordan, Lane Johnson, Ezekiel Ansah, Barcavius Mingo, Jonathan Cooper, Tavon Austin, D. Milner. Remember D. Milner? I wanted D. Milner so bad.
Yeah, I wanted D. Milner too.
It's just...
So I would say of all the names you just listed, Lane Johnson is the only player who's objectively better than Fisher.
And he's also had some very strange pockets of his career, though, where, like, if you wanted to even nitpick a little bit about how, like, because he had the suspension and everything, and then he had an injury issue. I think if you wanted to redo, especially the tackles, Johnson probably needs to go first. But it's not like I'm not losing my mind. Then it's Chance Wormack, DJ Fluker, DJ Hayden, Sheldon Richardson, Star Latulele, Kenny Vaccaro, EJ Manuel, the first quarterback off the board. There's not anything there in the top 16 where you're just like beside yourself.
Absolutely, and that's demonstrative of one of the problems with the draft.
Yeah,
and so I'm all on board with them addressing the offensive line and being aggressive with it. But I think, you know, at 31 again, I think you would need to go interior line, unless they get really lucky and one of the blue chip guys drops to a spot they feel like they can trade up for him. And I don't think there's a lot of teams, especially like AFC teams. Can you imagine if you're an AFC team and the Chiefs call you and like, I don't know, like Waddle is still on the board, and they call you and say, hey, we'd like to trade up for your pick. Mm-hmm. You know for a fact, at least half the teams in the AFC are telling them to go straight to hell.
Yes.
Like, they're like, oh, yeah, so you can grab another 4-2 guy. Screw you, Brett Veach.
Yes.
We're not doing this. And it wouldn't even matter what you offered. And it might be a similar thing if a great tackle's left on board. It's like, oh, that's great. You want Mahomes to have, like, a ton of time and protection? How about no? Instead, we don't.
So
it's just a tough place to be in. And that's why you're probably going to end up with the Chiefs. You know, like we talked about, times ours. They're going to take some defensive end that everyone had graded out as a third rounder.
Yep. I just think at this point, I've said this now in a number of times, a number of places, but if I could just get odds on who, what position group the Chiefs would take with their first round pick, I think edge at this point is just it would just be absolutely incredible value. Everyone's talking about offensive linemen. I think edge would be such a good value. We may end up having that conversation again on this show at some point in the future. But one more thing on the offensive line, and then we'll let you go and you know continue about your birthday festivities. I imagine enormous plans just have to be. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Let me tell you, the older you get, the bigger a deal people make out of it or something to that effect. I share my birthday with my son.
Which is crazy. That's a bad break. I mean, that's just...
It's a rough break for me.
It's not really your birthday.
No, it's not. No one cares. Let's be honest.
I care. I could give a bleep about your son's birthday.
I appreciate
it. I don't care about his birthday
that.
At all. And, what's he ever done for this radio show?
Though,
nothing.
And he's and even though he's obviously in a different location, so he won't necessarily hear this. But you know, since my son Tucker's 15th birthday, so happy birthday, Tucker! There is not a dad out there that has a better son. There's absolutely not. So he'll never hear that, and that's why I can say, you know, tender-hearted things because there's no way he'll hear it. So
that's
like a good father does,
right? And then like we can like have this filed away at some point, and then years in the future, you know, we can. That maybe he'll just get a micro SD card in an envelope at his house, and it'll just be that audio clip, and it'll be touching. We'll put it in a Build-A-Bear or something. It'll be great.
Yes. Although he did make me feel ancient yesterday when I drove him to a job interview.
Oh, so, I saw you tweet about that.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, man. That had to be a moment, right?
It was a moment, and I made sure because I didn't want to be nervous, so I didn't make too big a thing out of it. So I'm going to drop you off. I'm not going in there with you because that's not, you know, that's not what men do. You know, we don't,
no.
Or adults,
no
frankly.
Support. You cannot,
that's not a gender issue.
No,
that's
not a, supportive, not even, barely even care. Just, oh, you open the door and see if he rolls out it.
But
yeah.
It's just like a man. Hey, you're going to do great. I told him he's going to do great. Don't be too nervous. Just be yourself. You know, I think I stole a bunch of like Andy Reid's lines and Patrick Mahomes' lines. Like, yeah. All you need to do here is be yourself.
Yeah.
Let's go out there and be great every single day. Yeah. And like, and so, no, but I aged so much. I was like, I just dropped my son off at a job interview. My son might have a job. That's how old I am.
Yeah.
And it's disconcerting.
Well, I don't want you to dox your son's potential employer, but can you tell us like what type of place of employment it is by general genre?
A hardware store.
That seems pretty good. That seems like a pretty good first job, honestly.
It does. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. They told him they'd get back to him because they've got some applicants, but he did tell him that he really liked them.
Okay.
And so we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Is he old enough to use a bandsaw legally? Or
yeah, you know, we're in rural Minnesota. You know, it's more like guidelines than actual rules here. Maybe that's the advantage of having your, and I can call myself this now, having your old man be the assistant county attorney. You can tell the boss, you know, like the county will look the other way if you do this.
That's such a good point. Yeah, you can cut them a good break. What's the point of having that kind of power if you're not going to use it to help your kid get a job at a hardware store?
Unless I'm abusing the incredibly small amount of power I have, I don't understand what the point of law school was, yeah, honestly.
Seriously, I feel like that should be on law school applications. Like, do you plan to abuse this tiny amount of power you have years in the future?
Yeah.
And if you check no, they just reject your application because, like, we don't need you here.
Yeah, they're just like, no, we don't need lawyers like that. That's ridiculous.
This is an awkward now circle back to the segue, but I got like half of this topic out and I just wanted to put a bow on it. You want the Chiefs to break the bank and just go get Trent Williams, right? You can be honest. It's your birthday.
Yes! Yes, I do. I understand. Look, I've got a piece that I'm working on right now for the Chief in the North about salary cap shenanigans.
Yes.
And let me just tell people that there's some things they could do to where if they really wanted to break the bank on one player, they could. Now, it would be tough.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very tough.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, it would mean kicking, you know, money down the road, and maybe that'll come back and haunt them one day. But I think if 2020 taught us anything, is that there might be a world-ending pandemic next year.
Sure.
And so what are we doing trying to say, you know, hey, let's plan for 8 years from now. How about instead we go out and try to win a Super Bowl in 2021, huh? So if I had my druthers, and I like Eric Fisher a lot, and maybe he'd be willing to do some kind of restructure that extends him out an extra year to see if he gets healthy again.
Mm-hmm.
But I would go for it with Trent Williams and say, hey, you want to win a ring? We can pay you a little less, but we can still pay you good money, provided we have some flexibility here. Do I think it'll happen? Absolutely not. I think Trent Williams is going to have some team offer him like $20 million a year.
It would be fun, though. Whatever. I hope we get
so
one.
Fun.
I hope we get one surprisingly large signing, whoever that ends up being. One name, we're like, oh, yeah, I know who that guy is. All right. Hell yeah.
Yeah, that's all I'm asking. Whether it's, you know,
it's going to be an edge, but
Yeah, it's going to be an edge rusher. Although it would be kind of fun if, like, oh, the Chiefs signed Shaq Barrett. Okay.
Yeah, you know, that would be fun.
Yeah, that would be very fun. And he'd be a fit, by the way, that he's going to get paid. So it would be a lot of fun to do. Plus, if it were like an offensive player like Trent Williams, or like if they somehow, and this isn't going to happen, Chiefs fans, if they somehow figured out a way to like sign Allen Robinson, the angst of other fan bases. Do you remember when it seemed like the Broncos just kept signing guys?
Yeah.
And kept signing guys? And it was like, how are they getting away with this?
Yes.
That it would be like that. Like the whole, what's the Breaking Bad gif,
yeah.
You know? You can't keep getting away with it. It would be great.
It would be excellent. So tell me really quick here that we'll actually let you go for real. What's the plan for things coming up? There's the Athletic story coming up very soon, probably tomorrow. What you would do if you're Brett Veach, kind of the 10,000-foot view. What's the plan for maybe the next week or so from the Chief of the North newsletter that people can go sign up for a ridiculously low price of basically Seth will pay you to read it? It's pretty much like that at mnchiefsfan.substack.com.
So the plan right now, I'm working on an article to talk about why the salary cap is more flexible than people think. And this is true even in this year of COVID-19. depression, and we'll talk about that why. So it's going to talk about, you know, what it means with bonuses and structures, what it means guaranteed versus non-guaranteed money, that kind of stuff, and then what the Chiefs can do to save some cap money. Then what I want to do is write about some bold moves that I would maybe make in free agency. Those are always fun to write, like the big swings, where it's like, well, you can only do one of these five ideas, but let's write about all five of them just to get people revved up.
Right.
That's fun.
It's fun.
And then I'm going to I can't remember exactly when free agency starts. Once that starts to settle down, you know, obviously do film reviews of the free agents that they sign. And when I have time, I'm going to do a review of L'Jarius Sneed and then Frank Clark, reviewing at least eight of their games to kind of get a comprehensive view of how they played in 2020.
Looking forward to both of those in a very big way. I didn't know that the Frank Clark one was coming. That'll be whatever. I don't care what the takeaway ends up being. It's going to be spicy. I can feel already that there's going to be some spice. There's going to be some thoughts about that. So I look forward to that whenever it happens. Check it out,
right.
mnchiefsfan.substack.com, the Chief of the North newsletter. You can follow Seth on Twitter, at RealMNChiefsFan. And listen, I just think it's great that we have some of our more elderly, you know, media members doing some more kind of new media things, like starting a Substack. So, Seth, happy birthday. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Good luck on the big 5-0.
Hey, thank you. I really appreciate it, as always. Even though you're a terrible person.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
My beard is at a level of voluminosity. Not Illuminati, Larry Johnson. I know you're listening. Dude, his Twitter account. Don't use that as a liner. I don't want you to use that as a liner. I don't want Larry Johnson to find a picture of me from when I was 13 covering one eye. I don't know. I just did it. Oh, I just did it on Facebook, and now you can take that screenshot, and now I'm a devil worshiper or something. Oh, now he's going to cut me saying I'm a devil worshiper.
With Joshua Briscoe.
I'm a devil worshiper.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
I just realized the devil voice of mine that apparently comes out whenever I'm trying to defend myself against Larry Johnson or whatever sounds exactly like the host voice in Trivia Murder Party, the Jackbox game. Have you guys played Trivia Murder Party?
No.
It's really good, and also reminds me for the millionth time that whenever, I don't know when our best range is going to be, but we need to do a little AES Jackbox at some point.
It'll be fun.
A little Twitch stream, a little Twitchy Twitch. Would be very good if we can figure it out at some point. Trivia Murder Party, one of many Jackbox games. It's just excellent. An important thanks again to Seth Kaiser, and also happy birthday, Seth. There are a handful of questions that showed up through the Twitch about, you know, who do you like at Edge and that range and all that stuff. We will talk about that tomorrow. In fact, there's even some Brett Veach audio that we just simply didn't get to today. We'll do some of that tomorrow as well. Twitch is very on brand, or very on board with the on brand AES Jackbox. Well,
it'll be fun.
It will, honestly.
At some point.
Well, here's the thing. The issue is the three.
Laugh is just weird.
It was weird. That was an odd laugh.
I don't know.
One of the three of us is almost always working or sleeping. Maybe literally always. One of the three of us is almost always working or sleeping.
Pretty close.
And then we got to get more people to join in. So it's just a bit of a toughie sometimes. But we're going to try to figure it out. Also, on the NBA front.
Only 9 days, though.
We are near. We're near. I don't want to count my chickens before they hatched. Although, Jay Crowder just hit another three.
What's the score?
Suns right now are up on the Lakers, 34-27. Nice. 10 minutes left in the second quarter.
Sorry, Jokic just posterized Chris Middleton.
So the Nuggets are up right now, right?
97-78 with 30 seconds left in the third.
So that's probably going to happen. The Celtics beat the Clippers earlier.
Yep.
There's a chance that there's going to be an AES NBA sweep tonight. That we may clean sweep it.
My soul just disappeared on that.
Your soul disappeared?
Yeah, watching Jokic just posterize Chris Middleton.
Why would that make your soul disappear? I just watched Caruso bobble a pass, which made my soul disappear.
That will also make your soul disappear.
I don't know what
Jokic
why that means your
have my soul. He's a Jokic the soul reaper.
Yeah, he could definitely reap your soul. That
you
seems reasonable.
You wouldn't have to reap it. I just give it.
I don't know if it works the same way then.
Jokic the soul receiver?
Jokic the soul
a sister. But then it just sounds like he's killing you, and then the Grim Reaper comes in and cleans up the mess or whatever. So I don't know if that's necessarily the best use of our time. LeBron James also good at basketball. I don't know if you guys knew that, but he does appear to still be good at basketball.
He's pretty good. I'm just waiting to see if there's 10 seconds left in the quarter. I just want to see if the Nuggets get to 100 by the end of the
quarter. Yeah, I mean, I personally don't care. Beards, do you care?
No, not really.
I hope they missed it. They missed it.
No, he missed it. I'm just seeing if they got the tip in before the clock expired. Nope. I'm not for sure.
Beards, can you please tell me the names of the three people in the NBA dunk contest?
Real fast, Jokic, 27 points, 11 assists, 5 rebounds.
Cut his mic. You can just cut his mic. Whenever he says Jokic, you can just cut his mic.
No, I'll do that.
New rule.
Time.
New rules. Cool. You can.
Bucket counts, 99. We're up 7, 19.
99 is not the same as 100.
No, it's not.
I think he said, don't cut his mic. Just cut the volume in half.
Okay. So
we are up 19.
The dunk contest this year features three people, which is usually less than four, which is what they usually do.
Yeah.
It's three less than four.
Obi Toppin, who is averaging 4.5 points a game.
Yeah, but Obi Toppin is like, he led the NCAA. He led college basketball.
I've heard of him.
He did, but he has also done very little.
Obi Toppin can't be stopped.
You can go ahead and 50% his volume if you want.
Cool. And then it is Anthony Simons of the Blazers, who is also.
It's pronounced Anthony.
It's Anthony.
That was a joke.
Who is also averaging.
It's pronounced Anthony
less
Simmons.
Less than 10 points
a game. You can
cut
my mic if you want now.
And then
also.
It is Cassius Stanley, who is a Fort Wayne Mad Ant and has played 8 games this year in the NBA.
A Fort Wayne Mad Ant?
Yep.
But he's a Duke guy.
He is. However, he is barely on an NBA roster. No, is it going to be bad this year?
It's the Brotherhood.
That's a tough dunk contest. I know that doing it at the halftime of the All-Star game was tough already.
Can you turn my mic up?
I don't mind having only three people because it's already different. But if you could get one of three people that has done anything on the NBA level whatsoever, that would have been
nice.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's not great.
Anthony Edwards, Zion, and
I'm guessing, but
and
those guys
Jokic.
Just, I imagine just, yes, he would have won.
No.
I said Zion. Zion would win.
Yoke, this is the quietest the bump music's ever been. Is everything okay?
There's a loud fan.
Okay, that's
fine.
That
might be true, yeah.
I'm just worried about our technical difficulties even at the very end of the show. We'll talk to you again tomorrow night. Bye, Mom!
You are listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.